Joining us now is Tony Arterman at Wise Wolf Gold. And, of course, Tony has set up DavidKnight.gold to take you there. Let him know that you're coming through me. And he can help you buy gold or silver, large or small amounts. He can also help you to get on a regular savings basis with his Wolf Pack. You can pick a level each month that you would like to buy into, and he can get you quantity discounts with the buying group, larger purchasing quantity. So get you some better prices, because he's got a lot of people that are doing that. So you can sign up that way. And, of course, you can also do your gold and silver IRA, and he can help you with that as well. So joining us now is Tony Arterman. It's good to have you on, Tony. Thanks for coming.
It's good to see you, David. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you know, we were talking during the break, and I've seen a lot of talk lately about the end of the petrodollar. And you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when it was on a Sunday that, and we talked about on the following Thursday, the fact that Saudi Arabia announced that they were going to be selling directly to China, not going through the dollar. They were going to just use their local currencies and that type of stuff. And we said, well, that's it. It's over. And now a lot of people are talking about that. The date was June the 9th. It was like 50 years almost to the day since they had their agreement. The one thing that I wasn't sure of, and I'm still not sure if it was actually like a formal treaty or something, or if it was just kind of a de facto agreement, a handshake or something. But it went on for 50 years, and on the 50th anniversary, they started selling with China, and they're also going to be a partner in this new CBDC that is set up on top of the Chinese yuan, and that's being run through the Bank of International Settlements. This is going to be huge.
It is, and it's absolutely amazing that, I mean, we've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. Some of my listeners are probably tired of it, but I'm like, this is huge, and the mainstream media almost completely ignored it. On my show last week, I said, I found a lone article just kind of out there in the periphery. no one was talking about in the mainstream, you know, mentioning it. And like you said, it's hard to really drill down to see if there's a formal agreement. I know that we had a lot of communiques with the Saudis, and especially 1973 with the oil embargo and the rest. We went off the gold standard in 71. They were looking to do this. It's what, in my research, I think that's Kissinger and Nixon and John Connolly, who was head of the Treasury, you know, when we went off the gold standard. I think they were looking to do something to peg the dollar to something. But it's interesting that we got, you know, 50 years down the road, and there's nothing. Our government completely ignores it. At least that's how I see it. I mean, there's not any talk of it. There's no press releases or anything. Now, you know, if you look, and there was an article on Kitco, some of the stats that come out about the petrodollar are absolutely fascinating. Not just Saudi, but 80% of all the transactions that go on around the globe in crude, if you're buying crude oil, are denominated in dollars. So if one goes, I think it's a domino effect.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk about money velocity, and people are always asking, you know, why don't we have hyperinflation here? Why? You know, how is the dollar still, you know, going after all this abuse? Well, it's because it's used around the world. And I know this is, you know, again, people have normalcy bias, and then there's the mainstream media who never talks about this. You know, it's always the stock market. It's always Wall Street. It's very myopic. But really, the reason the dollar has survived as long as this is an experiment, literally going off the gold standard in 71. This is an experiment. The average lifespan of a fiat currency is 26 years. That's what history teaches us. So we've doubled that, but we're losing all of the things that prop up this currency system. And it's going to, David and I don't have a crystal ball. We don't know when this is going to drop, and as far as the strength of the dollar and the rest. But you can see the storm clouds on the horizon for the supremacy of the dollar. It's just not looking good, especially when our government doesn't have any plans to, you know, they're not brokering any deals here in our favor. They're not even trying to make a mistake. So it is interesting to watch, David.
And, you know, the point that you're making about how you just don't hear anything about it anywhere, even in most of the alternative media, that was the very first thing that Brian Shalhavi said. He said, look, it's not, even Zero Hedge is not talking about it. You know, Zero Hedge, alternative media, focused on financial stuff, they're not even talking about it. He said to find more of a discussion on this, he had to go to the Business Standard out of Bangladesh. to get a discussion of this because nobody is covering it. Not even the alternative media. Everybody is so focused on the, you know, the reality TV show of this presidential election and all the crimes against each other and people being jailed and everything. Nobody's talking about the financial foundation of this country being rocked. And it is a big rocking of the foundation of this country. With all of this debt, like I pointed out yesterday, $56 trillion is what the Office of Management and Budget estimates it's going to be within 10 years. And that's a very, very conservative estimate because in that estimate, they're not imagining that the spending is going up and they're not imagining that there's going to be tax cuts. And both of those things are going to be happening. We know that's going to happen regardless of who becomes president.
Well, we know one thing. This government and the central bank, when they have a problem, what do? They inflate their way out of it.
That's what
a fake currency does. It literally, the welfare warfare state, they inflate their way out of a problem. So when they do that, folks, what happens to the purchasing power of your dollar?
That's right. It continues
to go down. And so I think when we look into the future, you know, you see, you know, the central banks around the world, which there's some stats coming out from the World Gold Council that's putting out these surveys they're doing with central banks. If you watch the mainstream media financial networks, they don't even talk about central banks buying gold. And they surveyed, most of the central bank surveys that see that there's going to be a continuance of central bank gold demand, but 81% of the central banks around the world surveyed said they see an increase in that. Now, why isn't that headline news?
Yeah.
All these analysts across the board are talking about stocks and they're wondering why gold is up. Well, it's not only gold is up, but it's breaking its all-time high. As a matter of fact, I'm checking spot prices this morning. Silver broke $30 again, which it should have done years ago, but it's at $30.60 a troy ounce, and gold's at $23.58. A year ago, David, we were talking gold was at like 1800. So when we were doing the same time last year talking, you know, we were in the 1800s, below 2000. So, we are on a trajectory. And again, if you're watching this to see about investments, it's not that the dollar's going up or that gold is going up. It's the dollar's losing purchasing power and people are making bets around the world on where the dollar's headed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I think a very sophisticated game of chicken. The central bank here in the United States can't buy gold because it's at war with it. If you buy it, it's like you increase its power. So this is going to be, I don't think it's going to end well for the central banksters here. We got a long way to go, but I think the groundwork is being laid for, it's not that BRICS, that Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and Saudi Arabia are going to supplant the dollar. They're going to have some BRICS currency that's going to supplant the supremacy of the dollar. It's that there's going to be a basket of all kinds of things. And it's, I think gold will be at the top of that. Like all these countries trading in gold outside of the system. The weaponized dollar system that these countries want to move away from. So I think gold really is the world reserve currency at this point. It's just that the other countries are moving away from the dollar system is going to, I think, ultimately crush the dollar's supremacy.
Yeah. You've talked many times about how, and if we look at it, some people are saying, well, this is 80 years of a petrodollar. Well, it's not 80 years of petrodollar, but it's 80 years of the dollar as the world's reserve standard because we had Bretton Woods. One, as you talked about many times right after World War II, that was propping up the dollar, with gold. And then when that was exposed as an obvious fraud, you had Nixon and Kissinger say, well, we'll prop it up with energy because everything was running on oil. And this was, in this article from Brian Shalhavi, I thought it was kind of interesting because he talked about the geopolitics and the maneuvering of Kissinger in this and how his purpose really was to, the OPEC embargo kicked off because we took the side of Israel in the Yom Kippur War, right? And yet it didn't hurt America. It hurt Europe, because America had a lot of domestic production. So they were hurt worse than we were. We had gas lines and things like that. Everybody remembers that. And, depending on whether your car tag was odd or even, you could get gas on an odd or even day, that type of deal. So there was a little bit of rationing. There was a big spike in the prices, but it really hurt Europe even worse than it did us, even though Europe was not the target directly of that OPEC embargo. But what his point was is that other people believe that, you know, what Kissinger was doing was kind of targeting to make Europe weaker, and also targeting to break the influence of these European oil companies like BP or Shell or other ones like that, and to put the United States into that position. And when I saw that, they didn't make the analogy to what's going on in Europe right now with the natural gas pipelines from Russia. But that's, many people have said that's maybe the underlying issue with this Russian war, a big part of it for the Biden cartel people, you know, to break Europe again on that energy issue. And so at the time they put this together, they got all, you know, the United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Libya, Iran, Kuwait, Iraq, all these different ones. They brought this in. It wasn't just the Saudis. They all were doing this. And now, as you pointed out before, Iraq is saying, well, we're not even going to allow the U.S. dollar to be traded here. I mean, they're turning against the dollar with a vengeance, because the way it has been weaponized against everybody. Isn't it amazing? It reminds me when I look at Biden, that clip from Star Wars where Princess Leia says to Darth Vader, you know, the tighter you squeeze, the more this is going to come through your fingers or whatever, like, you know, like water or something. It's something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing it. But, you know, that's really what is happening. The tighter that Biden tries to squeeze everybody, the more this all slips through his fingers, it seems like.
Well, it's true. And, you know, the calls are coming from inside the house. We know that the reach of the World Economic Forum, the globalist, really is the deep state here in the United States. That's why you talk about Kissinger setting up American influence. That's kind of bizarre now if you think about it, because nobody here in this government is trying to set up American influence almost anywhere except for places that, like Taiwan, for example. What is that? It's schizophrenic. We ceded Taiwan to the Chinese in 1979 officially. We broke diplomatic relations with Taipei. That's an official document with Zygmunt Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter. Nixon and Kissinger gave Mao a verbal promise on Taiwan in 1972, saying it's a one China policy. So we abandoned what we used to call Formosa, you know, during the Cold War. So it's interesting, looking at the agreement that you talked about Kissinger setting up, you know, our first relations with the House of Saud and American influence goes back to around the times of Bretton Woods and the United States and Franklin Roosevelt, and saying, look, we'll give American protection for this, Middle Eastern oil. So we've had that connection for decades and decades. But it's interesting now to watch it wane, you know, in the face of like losing the petrodollar. And you got to think about, Kissinger wanted American influence there. What is the issue now that we want? It's complete chaos. It doesn't make any sense unless you're talking about taking America's influence and destroying it from the inside. That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, this is conspiratorial conjecture. But,
well, you know, Kissinger was also heavily involved and always there with Bilderberg Group. And he also opened up, he and Nixon opened up to China. And I think he was trying to, you know, to have an American dominance was really kind of a stepping stone for these people to then be able to transfer it over to China. All they care about is being in charge. They have no loyalty to anyone or any nation, right? They just want to make sure that they're in charge. And so I think that their concern about making America great was just a transitional period so that they could get what they really wanted out of China. China is the perfect model for them. You know, it's a corrupt, authoritarian, totalitarian regime, slave labor and all the rest of this stuff, counterfeiting, piracy, all the rest of this. I mean, China is the perfect model for them. You know, when you're talking about, by the way, when you're talking about Taiwan, I think I got an insight into why this is starting to get so important to them. It's been said for quite some time that Taiwan is incredibly important in the semiconductor industry, especially in the high-end chips. Yesterday, as people were talking about NVIDIA and the fact that it's gone up since it first went on the stock market in 1999, it's gone up by 600,000%, that NVIDIA has only one manufacturing facility that makes all of their chips now that it is the world's most valuable company, and that one facility is in Taiwan. So there you go. That's why they're going to protect Taiwan, I guess.
Well, it's a huge pivot, you know, foreign policy wise. You know, if you go back to the 1970s, we opened China And again, you don't see these kind of moves anymore, which is very alarming. If you're paying attention to geopolitics, we're not making any moves on the grand chessboard except for things that really put us in a fast track for kinetic warfare, which is why yes. I'm alarmed by it. That's why we're talking about it. It makes no sense. And I think you're talking about some of those the plants there in Taiwan. From what I've read, that they've got like plans to self-destruct. Like they've got like they can push a button and all of a sudden it destroys everything. If that's true, and you know, is China going to make a move on that? I don't know.
That makes me think. I don't know if you ever saw the Peter Sellers film The Party. He's an extra on a movie, and he's like taking his way. He leans, and they've got this one take where they're going to blow up everything. And before they get the camera rolling, he's an extra, and he just pushes the button by mistake and blows everything up. I hope that doesn't happen in Taiwan. You know, bring back Peter Sellers, take the whole thing out.
You see, too, that the Chinese president has been talking about how the U.S. was trying to goad them into war.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It was a headline, on RT a couple of days ago. So, you know, this is a really strange time, you know, whatever is happening with the global markets and everything else and where payment systems are going to be. I'm over here. I'm watching both the fronts of the currency war and the actual, hopefully not, but that's what looks like a kinetic war that they're trying to manufacture right now, David.
Well, you know, as part of this article to bring it up to the current time, we're talking about the fact that even though the Biden cartel has been unable to sign any deal with the Saudis and they're going with the Chinese on the financial stuff, their fallback position was to try, and they still haven't secured even this, was to try to make sure that militarily we were still going, you know, that was one part of the petrodollar. We'll sell you all the advanced military equipment we've got, and your part of the deal is that you're going to make sure that the oil is sold in U.S. dollars. But now what they're saying is, well, let's still do this military deal. Don't have any Chinese bases there, and we'll give you access to all the military stuff, because that seems to be our only product anymore is war. And I don't know how that's going to continue to operate. I mean, we're at the point where this country has become so spoiled with and soft with all this stuff. It's just like Boeing. I don't know how long we're going to be able to maintain any technological dominance. And even if we have technological dominance in these things, is that going to be enough? I think that, as Gerald Slinty has always said, you know, when people lose everything, you know, they lose it. And, when it gets really bad, the government takes us to war. Well, they've already declared that their intention, the technocrats' intention, is to take everything from us. So it's therefore, their intention to take us to war as well.
I think you're right. You know, the IMF has been warning that, AI is going to, is creating massive inequality. It's going to create unsustainable inequality.
It'll be the scapegoat. Yeah.
It'll be the scapegoat. But that's, I think they'll blame a lot of things on that. It was a tweet I saw on Gold Telegraph, and he said, actually, it's central banks that are creating inequality. And they do that. They do that. Again, you know, getting back to your point, if you really want to, you know, a thought experiment, what saves this system? What really props up continues to, this is in 80 years on after Bretton Woods, the end of World War II, you know, America was 5% of the world's population. We're still about that at 50% of the world's wealth. Europe was in ashes. Japan was in ashes, and we were rebuilding the world. You know, the new economic world order came out of Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, and we've since broken those agreements. We created an experiment with our currency in 1971. You mentioned, you know, we talked about the oil embargo in 73, and that's when the petrodollar started. That's also the, you know, you're right, David. It's not these deals that were brokered, whether it's the SALT Treaty with Nixon, the Strategic Arms Limitations Agreement, whether it was, Reagan with Reykjavik or all this. You don't see these kind of deals made anymore, but it was really just, I think, in a continuation to prop up that system long enough. It's like that they can build golden parachutes, because 1973 is a very pivotal year. That's the beginning of the Trilateral Commission. And you know that the technocrats, you're exactly right. There was a pivot towards Asia. That's why China was built up. That's why, you know, we brought in NAFTA here in the United States, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Ross Perot said it was going to be a giant sucking sound. Never before in history have you seen, and I've got books on my shelf. I've been fascinated with this since I was a kid. But, you know, Pat Buchanan wrote a book in 1997 called The Great Betrayal. And this was in 97, just watching that manufacturing disappear, watching these multinationals grow richer and richer as they moved away from the United States. That's why multinationals and corporations here don't fight for lower taxes. They don't fight for lower regulation. They don't care, because they can just move around and throw these workers into a Darwinian contest of survival of the fittest within places like China. That you're right. It's the perfect model of authoritarianism, dystopian technology, you know, combined with the communist state, to create this, you know, a top-down system that the technocrats love. And it's, you know, the globalists, whatever you want to call them, they're all melded together. So America was like put on this trajectory, put on this chopping block to siphon its wealth away. Mm-hmm. And so you wouldn't notice. So they give you all these products and they do bread and circus. You know, you can put your money in the stock market or what, you know, generations before not a lot of people did that. If you were in stocks, it was kind of this, you know, it was a niche deal. That was a business for you. Mm-hmm. Now they've got people in all kinds of products. There's, you know, 1974, David. Mm-hmm. It's the 401k was born. The IRA was born. They had to do all these things so you wouldn't quite notice that the fact that you can't save your currency anymore. And they're building this massive debt bomb. You mentioned the congressional budget off $56 trillion. We're at 130% of debt to GDP right now.
Yeah.
I mean, every 90 to 100 days, we go $1 trillion in debt. It took us 200 years to do that. So getting back to all of this and what we're talking about, like these little warning bells going off, whether it's Taiwan, whether it's Ukraine. And again, the fact that nobody here in this, whoever is in charge, you call him Machiavellian Mike. He does look like a little skeeving little backstabber, doesn't he?
Yeah. Speaker of the House. He acts like one. He has actually stabbed us in the back multiple times already.
But he kind of looks like one, you know, just like he's got that look about him. And I just think, you know, there's nobody talking about any kind of fiscal sanity. That's so right. We, the people, if you're paying attention, try not to get so engrossed into the hype, whether it's Hunter Biden's conviction or Trump or what's happening with election. I could care less about the election. Honestly, I don't think any policy will change. I know that upsets people. I lose listeners. I don't see any way that any real policy changes. I mean, you have Trump talking about crypto, but let's not forget, I mean, under Biden, you had the Bitcoin ETFs. Biden doesn't rule that. Larry Fink from BlackRock does, folks. It doesn't matter what Trump wants on crypto. I'm sorry. I know a lot of my crypto friends, and I like crypto and I love Bitcoin, but you know, policy is dictated by the banking establishment.
That's right.
Policy's not dictated by the president. I mean, unless you actually had a real active president, but I mean, come on, who's really going to do that?
It's just like saying, I'm going to get rid of the income tax and we'll do all the taxes at the border. You and I have talked about that. I think that would be superior to what we have, but there's no way that's going to happen because there's too much vested interest there. It'd be too disruptive. And of course, it's just a campaign promise. And we've seen the record of how he handles his campaign promises. He's not any more interested in fulfilling his promises to us that he makes during the campaign than the promises that he made to his wives before he got married to them. Let's talk. You mentioned IRA. I got a question here. I've got a couple of questions for you. This is from Colton Kimberly. For Tony, a question. Can you explain a little bit about the gold IRA? My employer matches my contributions to my 401k, and human resources says I can't change to a gold IRA. Well, that's not really true, right? They may not make matching contributions into it, but if they put it into another IRA, he could always roll it over into a metals IRA, right?
Absolutely. Like if you've got an existing 401k now, because of your employer's procedures or whatever it might be with the company that they're with, the HR system, you may not be able to do much with the 401k that you've got now. You can ask your 401k manager if you can put it into gold stocks. I've seen that where you can at least get into the silver and gold mining stock arena with your 401k. But what you could do is go ahead and set up your gold and silver precious metals IRA now, so it's ready to go. And then when you're ready to roll over, like when you eventually you're going to own that 401k. I mean, if you're going to move jobs or whatever under that parameter, or you can withdraw from it now and put it into a gold and silver IRA without penalty.
Yeah, if you're vested in it, you can. If you're vested in it, can you roll? I don't know. I'm not an accountant. I don't know. But maybe if you were vested in your 401k, maybe at that point, then you can roll it over into another instrument, I guess, maybe.
Right? Yeah, so if you've got an existing 401k, you just set up a precious metals IRA And then once you've got that, you can roll it over. Like you can, you don't have to do it from, you know, if you've got your entire balance, you could take portions of it mm-hmm. and move that over into a precious metals, physical precious metals IRA. And again, that's the reason you do that is from product to product. So you don't incur tax penalty. Mm-hmm. You just, it's just going for, it's just like moving an account balance and it's all above board. You can, we have a company called New Direction Trust that we work with and. You yes. definitely can get all your questions answered there.
And I guess really the issue would be is can you, you know, 401k is different than an IRA. If it's in an IRA, of course you can roll it anywhere you want to do. I don't know if you can get it out of the 401k into some kind of an IRA if you're vested, excuse me, or if it has to stay there until you separate with them or something. So that would be the question, I think, the central question about it. Junior Barner says, Tony, I want to buy gold. Why don't you take money orders?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. Just mail them to me. I need to know who you are. Don't make sure I have a return address and your phone number. I'll take money orders. That's fine.
Okay, good. Atomic Dog. Tony, do you see or know of a reason for the recent dip in silver prices that happened over the last month? Well, it's just gone back up again, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's up. It's up over $30. It's. I think this is the highest it's been now. We're matching where we were a couple 3 weeks ago. It's just some profit taking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really mm-hmm. what it boils down to. There was some large entities and some well, there was some profit taking, and then a lot of people, you know, they'll hold on to their silver for years if they have to. And when silver's been so depressed for so long, David and I've talked about that with. You know, JP Morgan getting convicted of suppressing the silver, but some large entities, that have an active role in keeping the price of silver down so they can accumulate. So when it does break through, a lot of silver floods the market. But I would look to see, you know, I would expect silver to continue doing what it's doing right now. I think there's just too many deficits as we've talked about on this show, many times, you know, I think the deficit last year, was close to 200 million ounces that mm-hmm. were missing. Mm-hmm. So like the above ground supply had to be eaten into to fill orders for, you know, not only technology, but medicine and monetary issues and all the rest of that jewelry. So the deficit is expected to be something like that this year. So that cannot go on forever. I mean, there's hundreds of millions of ounces and deficits can't go on, and the demand only increases, whether you're talking about solar or monetary issues.
Yeah, just 2 days ago, this headline on Kitco, can silver prices sustain slowing momentum in the green energy transition? And so, you know, that's the question. As you look at them being consumed in the, you know, the solar panels and things like that, if that slows a little bit, you know, that might slow silver, but they're continuing to push that pretty hard. So between that and other electronic uses, I think that's going to continue to be a real, push on the prices of silver. And then we have, a couple of, predictions from a couple of different banks. Wells Fargo is saying in terms of gold price will churn for the next 6 months and then rally back to record highs. That's their take on it. And if you look at another bank, Saxo Bank is saying gold and silver are caught in a prolonged consolidation, but prices will head higher. I think everybody understands what the fundamentals are. They understand what the fundamental problems are with the American dollar and what is going on in America. And I think that they're looking at gold and silver. That's why they're looking at it after the election, because there's going to be a lot of distraction and manipulation before the election. But I think it'll be after the election that you're going to continue to see this go.
Yeah, I think the wheels are off as far as like cheap metals in our lifetime. And you may see maybe one more dip like we saw in the first quarter of 2020 with the lockdowns. But that's when, silver went down to like $12-$13 an ounce and people were calling me trying to lock in trades and I couldn't lock it in. There was no silver to be had. I mean, when the prices go down like that, it's not real. The same thing with gold. With central banks buying, David, this, you know, $2,300 an ounce gold, I think we've reached resistance point. You're never going to see, I mean, unless there's just a massive depression or something crazy happens in the market, $2,000 an ounce. I mean, that's when, you know, I remember when I was hosting for you filling in 4 years ago, August 6, 2020, gold broke its all-time high. I was live on air hosting your show in Austin. And I mean, I had Gerald Celente on that day, as of all things. I'm just watching that happen. And, you know, then they went on for years with dipping under 2000. And then all of a sudden you see this year, this last 8 months or so. And it's just all time high after all time high. I think we're in the age of gold. The dollar's waning, as all the things that we've talked about. And you turn on the financial networks, they have no idea what's happening. Why is the demand of gold up? I mean, my friend Charlie Robinson, host of Macro Aggression, sent me an article today of the gold bar vending machines in, I think, South Korea. They have gold bar vending machines. And my brother sent me a video yesterday of an actual gold back ATM that they're about to roll out. So they're going to put these in like major retailers where you can buy gold backs just with your credit card. And they're just going to dispense it out of the ATM. The demand is something I didn't think I'd see this soon. I thought it was going to be something as I start to retire, you know, there would be this awareness, but it's happening a lot faster than I thought. And, you're just seeing regular people that have never thought about their currency before starting to pay attention. And if Americans are paying attention, that means that the rest of the world has been paying attention for years, you know?
That's right. Yeah. When we look at this, you stop and think about it, going back to Bretton Woods too, right after World War II ended, this has been going on pretty much, longer than anybody anybody's living memory. You'd have to be way over 80. You're still a child, you know, when this thing was established. So we haven't really lived in a world or in an America where America did not have the dominance. And, this is going to be a very different thing. I look at it and, it's going to be interesting times, you know, it's going to be an opportunity. Plus it's going to be danger. It'll be an opportunity for us to get a little bit freer, I think, from a federal government, because that's been their superpower, to be able to bribe and blackmail people with that money. But it's also going to be a very challenging time for us economically. And one of the things in this article, that Brian Shalhavi had, he had a report from a guy with the Atlantic, and he said he actually went to Saudi Arabia and he talked to a lot of people there about America. Many of these people had been educated in the United States, spent a great deal of time there, maybe got a PhD or whatever. One guy that got a PhD in America, he said, America is just coming apart at the seams. And I hate to see it happen because I really love the country. But that's the view from the outside. And that really is the view from the inside if we pay attention. And so with that happening, and with the fact that it's not just the loss of the petrodollar, but it's this new thing that nobody has ever seen before. Nobody in living memory has ever, you know, seen a situation where America is not the reserve currency, and none of us have seen anything like what's coming with CBDC. That's why I lean toward gold and silver, because I want to have something that is outside of that control system. And I want to have something that's outside of this system that is going to rapidly collapse at some point. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it's inevitable that it's going to happen. These are two things that we've never lived through. And so we don't really know what's going to happen, but we've got a general idea that's going to be very difficult, especially if your only assets are dollar valued, I think. That's right. Gold, silver, Bitcoin, if you're comfortable with that. But, you know, the thing is that it's going to happen. And the CBDC stuff, I think one of the most ominous things about it is that not only did Saudi Arabia leave the petrodollar, but they jumped in with the Chinese on a CBDC thing that is attached to the Bank of International Settlements. The worst case scenario.
The central bank of central banks. That's where all the gold went in 1933, folks. These are old institutions. They've been planning this for as long as I can. I started researching, you know, the first time I went on your show, we talked about the cover of the Economist magazine from 1989 says ready for world currency. They've been talking about this for years. Now they have the technology. They got blockchain. Somebody asked me the other day, said, don't you think Bitcoin is like a setup to get people interested in using electronic currency and cryptocurrency, and then they're going to transition into the central bank digital currency? And I said, actually, if that was their plan, it's going to have a huge backfiring. And because, again, the people that, like, you look at Nigeria, they rejected the central bank digital currency. they loved Bitcoin. The banksters rolled out the CBDC. They rejected it. And what it does, I think a lot of this, the conversations that we're having now, I'm very optimistic. I think we have, and I'm glad we have the challenges that we do. I think God has us here for a reason. If I can go so far as to say, I think it's pure evil, that we're up against. So know your enemy. But just be thankful that we have an opportunity to show, you know, an alternative. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best thing. The elites have no alternative. So if you're talking about central bank digital currency, we've been having this conversation about crypto and gold and silver for so many years now. And especially with the loss of everything with the trust in the dollar system, people are asking questions. This is good. People should ask questions. It should be a better conversation, because when you ask those questions, you find out how fake the whole system is, and how evil the central bank. It's evil. That's what it is. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not economic. It's not. It's not political. It's pure satanic. That's what it is. They want to control everything you do. They want to shut down dissent. It's the end of politics. It's the end of history. But the good news is, you see people decentralizing all over the world.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
How are people going to go from I want to collect gold beans, you know, for my future, and I can sell these on the exchange, or I've got something liquid and I'm hedging against inflation and uncertainty, to, oh yeah, I'll download this and this will be, you know, this is my social credit score currency. I don't see that. It's going to be very difficult for them to sell this. They can force you.
Mm-hmm.
They can force you all they want, but I don't think that it's going to be something that is going to ultimately be a success in the way that they see it, as long as we resist and build the parallel systems. You see the states here in this country start to build their own, gold and silver vaults and exchange systems, and make gold and silver legal tender. Places like Oklahoma have passed a massive deregulation on cryptocurrency, which I love to see. And that's real crypto. Mm-hmm. And some places, are even looking at other states, we were talking about last week with Nebraska, that they've made it illegal. They're going to make it illegal for you to have a central bank digital currency. I love this. I love this, these headlines. And so the awareness is there. I'm not doom and gloom, but I am vigilant. I think that we've got to continue to fight and build better systems.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting times. It's going to be difficult times, and you need to make some kind of preparation, lots of different things. Learn how to grow food, learn skills, get into something that is not under their control, whether it's gold, silver, Bitcoin, anything like that. The more of these things we got, the better. You know, I mean, I don't want it to all be in just one thing, because they'll focus everything on that one thing. So as long as there's multiple things out there, that's fine. You know, whatever you're comfortable with. And one more comment. This is from Jason Barker. Gold and silver will never reach their true price until the ETF bubble is exposed. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he's 100% accurate on that. And I think that will be sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, I'll make this really short. What happened in the 1960s, if you look back on it, was glaringly obvious now. But I don't think people really saw it, what was happening as for its true value. I see a lot of commentators starting to pick up on this, something I've been saying for years. But we took the silver out of our coinage in 1965. And it was, I mean, pretty obvious. I mean, you can tell the difference in the coins. Dimes, quarters, half dollars that used to be silver, they just became debased, you know, nickel and copper. So all that silver, you know, all that monetary wealth, it's just transferred out. And so other countries started to take notice, and we had, you know, the LBJ and the Great Society on the Mekong, guns and butter, all that. We were paying for that. President de Gaulle of France sent his warships over to collect the gold in 1967, because he wanted to repatriate, you know, American dollars, because we pegged the dollar to go $35 an ounce at Bretton Woods, with the world's reserve currency, and you could always exchange it for gold. So de Gaulle sent the, you know, from France, and his warships over to collect it. That was a statement. It's like, we're going to pick it up with our Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the world started to look around. And so Nixon closed the gold window in 1971. So this is it's very much akin to what I think will happen with these exchanges and ETFs and the rest, is that you've had people investing for so long. When you cash out of GLD or any ETF that's gold backed, they don't send you a gold coin. They send you fiat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of us have been saying, and you can look up Stuart Engler's book that I've had him on my show called Rigged. It's about this, you know, and there's a whole organization of people in finance and people in the gold industry that have been suing to get more, you know, more of the records and show, you know, where the central banks are colluding with the bullion houses. Because I said earlier in the broadcast, the dollar's at war with gold. That's why all these central banks are buying gold, ladies and gents, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're not buying gold, because we would add. So China has a vested interest in buying gold because it drives the price of gold up. And when you drive the price of gold up, you expose what happened to the dollar. And, you know, it's now at gold close to $2,400 an ounce again, it's glaringly obvious that we've lost control of something. So to answer Jason's question, I think that this will happen, and it could be a gradual thing, or it could be a shock where somebody places an order and there's, you know, they can't fill it. Mm-hmm. On the COMEX. So it's going to be something interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is. It is. We are in interesting times. The old Chinese curse. You know, may you live, yes, in interesting times. But we're not worried about that. We'll just do what we can. And you've got a program that follows immediately after this program, right?
Yes, sir. Arterburn Radio Transmission once a week here on Rockfin. If you're watching on Rockfin on the America Unplugged channel, on my Twitter at Tony Arterburn and freeworld.fm. We'll probably just continue this conversation. That's what I did last week. I got some other articles to talk about, but always love seeing you, David. DavidKnight.gold. I don't want to keep you forever, but DavidKnight.gold. The Wolfpack, we've got some great deals going on now with the prices going up. Even when prices increase, David, I'll wait a couple of days on invoices so you can still get yesterday's prices. You can go check out DavidKnight.gold and check out Wolfpack. We've got a lot of great deals going on there, and promo code 1776 for constitutional free silver.
Thank you, Tony, and really do appreciate what you've done to support the show. And it's always important, just as we're talking about with the ETFs, the paper gold, the paper silver, and so forth, it's important to have somebody that you can trust. And so I've known Tony for a long time, done business with him for a long time. Thank you so much for what you do, Tony. It's great to have that resource there. DavidKnight.gold will take you to Tony. Right after the show, don't miss his program. Like he said, he's going to continue this discussion.
Let me tell you, the David Knight Show, you can listen to with your ears. You can even watch it by using your eyes. In fact, if you can hear me, that means you're listening to The David Knight Show right now. Yeah, good job. And you want to know something else? You can find all the links to everywhere to watch or listen to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's a website.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.